In September, Hurricane Fiona hit the island of Puerto Rico, causing mass destruction, catastrophic flooding, and island-wide power outages. The U.S. territory may have been able to cope with the hurricane to some degree, except it was still recovering from the devastation caused by a Category 5 hurricane in 2017. The island's residents have faced continuing issues, from a fragile electrical grid to a faltering economy as Puerto Rico struggles to climb out of bankruptcy. But the problems don't stop there. There's been a decline in manufacturing, chronic food insecurity, and what many of the island's residents essentially view as neglect by the United States government. So how does Puerto Rico recover and stabilize before the next climate disaster? Joining us to discuss this is Carmen Julín Cruz, the former mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, and fellow at Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts. She's also the host of a new podcast called Sheroics, about everyday women who are changing the world one community at a time. Julín, thank you so much for joining us and up front. You've seen the devastation after the hurricanes up close when you were the mayor. When you left office in 2020, the island hadn't recovered from the impact of Hurricane Maria. And now, in fact, it was still recovering from Maria in September when Fiona hit. Talk to me about what it looks like on the ground. You just got back. Talk to me about that.
Well, first of all, there's a lot of people are very angry, and they have a right to be. But they're also about to lose hope. And I think that's the worst disaster that there can be. There are still communities that don't have electricity. Hospitals that are faltering in their providing services. And what people have to understand is that, and you mentioned it a little bit, we were still recovering from hurricanes Irma and Maria, which was one right after the other. Financial bankruptcy. There were two coastal storms. Then there were two major earthquakes, and then there was the pandemic. That's all in a four-year time span. So it's one crisis after another. And what people are seeing is, first of all, there was the Trump administration that discriminated against Puerto Rico, and the money started flowing into Puerto Rico in 2020, even though it had been appropriated sometime before. But what people are seeing on the ground is a lack of vision and a hoarding of the local central government of Puerto Rico, of the resources that come into Puerto Rico. And the mayors are saying, give me the money and let me put all these plans moving forward. What it looks like, it's like a war zone that doesn't recover.
You mentioned the sort of crisis in 2017 is at least partially being linked to the Trump administration discriminating against Puerto Rico. Now we're in 2022. There's a Biden administration. How distinct is the response and recovery effort now versus then? I understand there's lots of problems on the ground, so in some ways it seems like it's not that different.
There is a difference in tone and understanding, right? One threw paper towels at us, and that GIF still continues to haunt the United States. And the other one is really going out of the way, the Biden administration, to say, hey, look, let me see what I can do without dictating energy policy. The problem is that what has been done in the ground in Puerto Rico sometimes contradicts the energy policy in the U.S. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, let's go green here, but then, well, let's not go that green. There's money still from Irma and Maria that hasn't been used.
Let's talk about that money. I'm glad you mentioned money, and you've talked about the distribution of money before. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, allocated $28 billion for recovery efforts. This is public assistance funding, right? 5 years later, this happened in 2018, 5 years later, only about one-fifth of it has been released. There have been additional funds allocated post-Fiona, but the issue, as I see it, isn't really allocation as much as it is being able to use public assistance money for recovery. Why is access to the money?
Correct.
Why is access to the money such an issue?
One of the things was that it was withheld by the past administration, but now it's flowing, right? So you think, well, what is the problem? Well, FEMA just went into an agreement with the central government in Puerto Rico. And the sub-recipient of the central government are the municipalities. So there's this entire red tape. You know, FEMA requires certain aspects in order to give the money, but then the central government of Puerto Rico requires additional money. And it is ludicrous. You know, there are mayors waiting for bridges to be built. There are citizens waiting for bridges to be built, for roads to be fixed all over Puerto Rico.
I have to wonder how much of the slow recovery effort, how much of the overall condition of Puerto Rico is tied to the fact that you have such a sort of uneasy, untenable kind of political status. You know, you have one representative in Congress, doesn't get to vote. You've been a U.S. territory since the late 1800s, but never had the kind of political representation that would come from, say, statehood. Is this the reason for the neglect? Like, if you had more of a voice in Congress, would that matter?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States. Territory is a euphemism for a colony. And we are a nation twice invaded, first by Spain and then by the United States. So what people and myself have been advocating is for a process of self-determination. First of all, the question that you ask is a very good one. Would Puerto Ricans be better off with representation in Congress? Well, are African Americans better off in voting rights, having representation in Congress? This is a fight that has been, you know, Congressman John Lewis gave his life to make sure that everyone, not only African Americans, but that everyone in the United States had a right to vote. Are women that are seeking abortions better off with representation in the United States Senate or Congress? So what we're looking for is to be seen, to be respected, and to have a real process of self-determination where all Puerto Rican voices can be heard and all non-colonial, because, you know, if the current status is the colony, we shouldn't include the current status.
But you sort of advocated for a kind of complicated relationship to the kind of colonizing power of the United States. You talked about a free association, association for Puerto Rico. That's not exactly statehood, and that's not exactly the kind of full independent nation that many people advocate for. And so in some sense, you're sort of advocating for a relationship where you have some of the representational power of a state, but also a kind of sovereignty that comes from being an independent nation.
Well, one of the things that the U.S. has already has with the Palau Islands and the Mariana Islands, this type of situation. But listen, in 1917, the U.S. made Puerto Ricans U.S. citizens. In 1941, Puerto Ricans had Earth citizenship by law. So that can change tomorrow. Let's say that Congress goes even crazier than they have gotten at certain times. And they say, we're going to strip that out and Puerto Ricans will no longer be born citizens of the United States. What I am saying, and you're right, and I'll answer your question. What I am saying is that there is a mature way of having a dignified relationship between Puerto Rico and the U.S. There's 5 million Puerto Ricans in the U.S., and I'm one of them right now. And when I go back to Puerto Rico in January, I'll be part of the 3.2 million Puerto Ricans that live in Puerto Rico. So there is a responsibility. When you put boots on the ground, when you tested the contraceptive pill in Puerto Rican women, when you tested Agent Orange in El Yunque, one of the largest rainforests in Puerto Rico, when you used the island of Vieques as target practice, bombed it and rented it to other countries to be able to use it, there's an obligation to at least provide the people of Puerto Rico the opportunity to decide what the future of their relationship with the United States should be. So regardless of what I believe, which I believe in free association, more importantly than that is that the process is a process that is transparent, that is democratic, and that states the implications of people voting for each one of the options in a clear manner so that there can be no translation into Puerto Rican Spanish, which will have nothing to do with the reality of what that vote would actually mean.
Well, Julene, I want to thank you for your time with us on Upfront. And of course, best of luck
to
everyone
much.
In Puerto Rico in the recovery effort. That is our show. Up Front, we'll be back next week.